Good evening. How are you all? Good, good. I think most of us would agree that life can be both horrendously messy as well as overwhelmingly beautiful. And if you have children, those extremes are magnified and yet somehow oddly mixed at times. All you have to do is look at some of these pictures to see how a moment in time can capture both. Sometimes when you're in the midst of a difficult season or just a super hard morning, it's fairly easy to recognize the mess, but not so clear how there's any beauty to it or really any good that could possibly come of it. And frankly, we may never really see the beauty in it. We just know God well enough to know it must be there somewhere. Other times, if we look hard enough, tilt our head just the right way, stand up tall, we might get just a little glimpse of it. And then other times, when the issue's behind us, sometimes we can see it clearly and really get a chance to see the good out of it. And then, every once in a while, right in the middle of a struggle, God's grace is so magnificent, so kind, so full of perfection that we are overwhelmed by his hope and love. In 1993, at the age of 41, my oldest sister Margaret was diagnosed with cancer. After a two-year battle, she died 1 week before Christmas, leaving three children and her husband. 6 months later, my dad died suddenly of a brain hemorrhage. In the midst of those losses, my other sister separated from her husband when she realized he was involved in an affair. As I was preparing for my dad's funeral reception, I stepped down from a stool and became dizzy. My neighbor, who was helping me, steadied me and said, "Do you think you could be pregnant?" Indeed, I was. I remember thinking, how cool is that, that God would give me the gift of the new life right in the midst of mourning for one that we had lost. 9 weeks later, I had a miscarriage. We were devastated. I had, of course, uncharacteristically told everyone because I thought it was such a cool story and because our family needed desperately something to look forward to. Perhaps the most difficult thing that I have ever done was to tell my two older children, Erica and Lee, ages 8 and 5 at the time, that the baby in mommy's tummy had died. After a time of healing, both emotionally and physically, we decided that we needed a good distraction and a change of scenery for our whole family. We planned a trip to Disney World. That's Beauty in the Mess. In the meantime, we discovered that I was pregnant again. Beauty in the Mess. So with about 10 weeks until delivery, may I not recommend that as a time to go to Disney World, but that's a separate story. Chris and I and Erica and Lee, my sister Margaret's husband and her three children, my other sister and her son, and my mom all headed to sunny Florida. While there, my mother developed a cough. We chalked it up to allergies and being bombarded with way too many grandchildren germs all at once. About 2 days after arriving home, she asked if I would mind taking her to the doctor. Her cough was not getting any better, and she was feeling exhausted. My mom was full-on German. German people are hardy folk, and this particular German woman had survived World War II. She never willingly went to the doctor. Tests were performed, and she was scheduled for surgery to remove a third of her lung 2 days after I was scheduled to give birth to our third child. A healthy TJ was born, Beauty in the Mess, and while I recovered from minor complications from the delivery, Chris went with my sister and brother-in-law to be with my mom for the surgery. Chris called me from the hospital. There was local metastasis, and the pathology indicated a very aggressive cancer. She had about 6 to 18 months to live. We reeled from the news, but our family clung to each other, Beauty in the Mess. Remember I told you she was a hardy soul. She chose not to do chemotherapy, only radiation. 18 months passed, 3 years passed, and the oncologist told us that there was really no need to schedule any follow-up appointments. Beauty in the Mess. While she still had cancer, it was progressing very slowly, and if she was not going to take any of his suggested treatments, there was really no reason to continue to see him. He looked at me and said, "You know, this is highly unusual." I told him it was the strength of a stubborn woman and the power of prayer. You see, my mom was not a believer, and she needed time to come to know him. Somewhere in the midst of all this, my sweet husband gave me this beautiful diamond and sapphire necklace, Beauty in the Mess. For the next gift-giving occasion, he gave me earrings to match, sparkling Beauty in the Mess. My mother continued to have a fairly high quality of life 5 years out from her diagnosis. At the age of 79, with stage 4 lung cancer, her health began to fail. As I was visiting her one day, she looked at me and said, "I'm anxious all the time. Why do you think that is?" Before I tell you what my answer is, I have to let you know this. The same toughness that brought my mom through a world war and kept her alive for 5 years after a horrendous diagnosis also could make her a bit difficult to be around occasionally. And I can be an awful lot like her. Sometimes we clashed, and this was one of those mornings. My response was not gentle nor kind, and I said, "Perhaps it's because you don't know where you're going to go when you die." Wow, the words hung in the air. I thought, I'm not sure how she's going to react, and I deserve whatever she's about to say. She looked at me a moment and said, "You know what? I think that may be it. Do you think Chris might have some time and come and talk to me this evening?" That night, my mom accepted Christ, beauty in the mess. About a month later, as her health began to more rapidly decline, she gave me her sapphire and diamond ring that I'm wearing tonight and wear a lot that had been a gift from my father. She had begun to disperse some of her treasures to my sister and I and the grandchildren, and she didn't know it completed the set that Chris had begun. I showed her the necklace and the earrings, and she was thrilled that it matched perfectly. 2 weeks later, she was on her deathbed. Hospice was called in. After visiting her one morning, I returned home. The moment I opened the door, I knew something was wrong. My dog was acting odd, and I just had that weird feeling. I went into our basement and saw that a window had been broken out. We had been robbed. Either our dog had discouraged them or my return had surprised them because only a few things were stolen. Beauty in the mess. They'd opened my jewelry box, but nothing was missing. But when I looked at my nightstand where I kept the necklace, it was gone. When you're in the midst of a trial, it often brings perspective. And while I was certainly sad that the necklace was gone, it was just a thing and replaceable. Police reports were filed, descriptions given. Jewelry is almost never recovered. It's easily sold and almost impossible to trace. My mother died 2 days later. 2 weeks passed, and the day before her memorial at Arlington, the police detective called me. "Mrs. Gleason, we've arrested the people we think broke into your home and several other homes in the area. We're able to recover a lot of stolen items. I'm pretty sure I'm looking at your necklace. It's still in the case." You can see the little police tag hanging on it. I wore it to her funeral the next day. Beauty in the mess. A profound image of God's loving kindness. If I'd gotten a note directly from him, I don't think it could have been as clear as the return of that necklace and the perfect timing of it. It was as though God said, "I know this has been hard, but I have not forgotten you. In fact, I am with you just as sure as the necklace around your neck and her ring on your finger." God is indeed with us. It's in the most difficult time that his presence is the most tangible. And it's not because he isn't there the other times. Perhaps that's the time we finally decide that we really need him. While I would not willingly sign up for a season like the one I just shared, I felt so close to him. He provided a peace that was palpable. And the irony is, he provides that peace regardless of the circumstances. The trial doesn't have to be cancer. It could be making my way through traffic in the rain on a Monday trying to get to mops on time. Or maybe it's trying to get the laundry finished and putting dinner on the table. Or for a lot of you, just getting the kids in bed. Maybe paying bills with limited funds or waiting to find out about that job. The difference is not God, it's me. Whether I choose to see it, the beauty is always there. God is the beauty, whether there's a mess or not. That's Miss DeWolf.
Thank you so much, Ingrid. Well, my name is Alyssa Pinkard. I'm here to introduce our speaker for the night, Kathy Holly. She is She's the wonderful Kathy Holly. She spoke here before. She is married to Steve, who is a pastor of ministries here at Emmanuel Bible Church. They've been married for 34 years. She's a mother to 4 children, 3 very tall boys, and 1 little girl who's actually not little. She's very short, like Kathy and I. One interesting fact is mostly genders, right, Kathy? Yes, she's got ginger children. Gingers. And all four are very distinctly different in their personalities, which she will explain tonight. Before kids, Kathy was a teacher, and she continues tutoring and educational testing after the kids, too, after her kids are grown. She's a dedicated friend and neighbor. She loves her delicate tees and her rustic cowboy boots, which is a little disappointing that she did not wear them tonight because she's got some fabulous cowboy boots. She's a faithful Bible study leader in her neighborhood, and she's a wonderful mentor and friend. Please welcome with me Kathy Holly.
Well, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to our time together tonight. And, you know, I kind of thought, I'm not sure why they're letting me speak. I'm certainly not an expert on this topic of personality. But I think it may have something to do with the fact that I was once a MOPS, too. And I think anybody that has a hairdo like that must have a lot of personality. Thank you. I will have to get used to having this close. That's great. So this is actually a warning. Ladies, make sure that if you do anything weird with your hair, like I'm pretty sure that was a perm. You know, think about that. Your kids are going to mock you someday. So just beware of that. And actually, you know, I got my kids back because I did what all good mothers do, and I made them stare into the sun until they went blind. But so eventually we did have four kids, and they are not blind, but they could be because of all the pictures I took with them staring into the sun. But, you know, they get you back eventually because when you're trying to take their picture when they get older, they make sure that they don't make it easy for you. So you have to often try numerous times to actually get a decent picture of them. And what worked for us was buying tickets to the Kennedy Center and getting them dressed up, then they finally kind of cooperated. So these are the four kids that have survived my mothering somehow. I experimented on each of them in different ways. The one farthest to the left is Drew. He's our second oldest. The second one from the left is Michael. He's our oldest. And then Meredith, who babysits a lot of your kids and just adores them. And then on the far right is David, who decided he needed to leave home and get as far away as he could, and he goes to Louisiana State University. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about a divine design, discovering your child's unique personality. And I love this theme that you all have been talking about this year, about a beautiful mess and embracing your story. But sometimes, you know, we are so close to that mess that it's hard to get perspective, isn't it? Between spilled milk and crying and sleepless nights and runny noses and whining, and I'm just talking about you as moms, it's really hard to get perspective on what's going on with our kids and to pause long enough to look at who they really are. And I realize that some of you have really little ones tonight, and discerning their personalities is going to be a challenge, but I would encourage you to think about this for you, because understanding our own personalities is really helpful as well as understanding the personalities of our kids. But sometimes we are so close that it doesn't quite make sense as we're looking at it, and we're trying to get a clearer picture. And so we need to back up a little bit and begin to understand that in all of that mess, there is a divine design when we get a little perspective. So let's talk a little bit about discovering your child's unique personality. And I love the word discover. I decided to start working on my talk. I would look that up in the dictionary. Well, it was not particularly helpful because the very first definition it gave me, and I thought, oh boy, this is going to be a long preparation if this is the way it goes. You know what the first definition was under the word discover? A credit card. I thought, really? Is that what we've come to? That is the most important definition of discover. I like this one a little bit better, to be the first to find or learn something. But really, I think the word uncover is probably a better definition for what we're talking about tonight. Because actually, God has already designed your child's personality, so you can't be the one to discover it because he already knows it. He already designed that. But you get to uncover it, kind of one layer at a time. And I want to share with you just a couple of verses. This is from Psalm 139, which I know many of you are familiar with. But this was penned by a young man, David, whose personality was pretty much overlooked in his family. When the prophet Samuel came to anoint one of Jesse's sons to be the next king, Jesse brought all his kids out, and he even forgot about David. David was out in the field taking care of the sheep, so kind of overlooked. But, you know, God knew David, and he knew what he was going to do with David, and he saw the potential of David. And David came to a point where he really had this close relationship with God. He was known by God, and he appreciated that. Psychologists and psychiatrists are these days doing a lot of writing and talking about the importance of being known and knowing each other. As a matter of fact, Kurt Thompson, who is a wonderful Christian psychiatrist who lives in this area, wrote a book called Anatomy of the Soul, and he talks about the importance of being known and your journey towards being known. And I think David got this. I'm going to read you just a couple verses of this as we get ready to talk about personalities. He said, "You've searched me, Lord, and you know me." He goes on to talk about all the things that God knows about him. God knows everything about his path, what he's doing, what he's thinking. God even knows what he's going to say before he says it. He says, "Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely. You know when I sit, when I rise." He lists all these things that God knows about him intimately. But listen to this part, and then I want you to think about your own children too. "You created my inmost being." What is our inmost being? It's who we are deep inside, isn't it? And he says, "You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." So he had this relationship with God where he knew God, and he knew that God knew him inside and out. And so if we're going to understand personality, first thing we have to realize is we're going to have to ask God's help. This is not something we're going to figure out on our own. I hope to give you some tools tonight to help you, but I want us to just pause right now, and I'd like to pray for us and ask God to help us understand. So why don't you join me? Let me just pray for you for a second. Father, I thank you for giving us this time together to talk about your design of personality. And we just admit it is so complex we can never really understand it. But I ask that you would help each of these moms here tonight begin to uncover a little bit more clearly, just maybe a few glimpses of how you have designed their children. We acknowledge that your works are wonderful. We know that full well. And so would you just suit what we say today to each mom's heart and encourage her through our time together this evening. We pray these things in the name of our Savior Jesus. Amen. So there are many lenses that we can look through. I'm going to have a hard time remembering to do this. If I'm talking way beyond what this says, you guys are going to have to remind me to click. So there are many lenses through which we can look at our children, and personality is just one of those lenses, okay? And there's so much overlap, but if you think about it, sometimes we're not sure, like we see our child and we think, are they very determined and kind of be a leader, or are they just two? You know, is this just a stage of development? It may have to do with their birth order. Are they sweet and cuddly, and this is just their nature, or is it because they're the fourth child and they have no choice but to be flexible with everybody else's schedule? Does it have something to do with their sex? You know, I did not understand. We had three boys and then a girl. Okay, I did not understand until Meredith came along and she was able to talk really early. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, you mean the guys understood all those things at that age? They just couldn't tell me? I saw a real difference in some of their development, especially when it came to verbal skills. It may have to do with brain dominance, left brain, right brain. My background is in learning disabilities. I love studying people's learning styles. Sometimes it has something to do with that. You probably are familiar with different love languages. Our culture, all of these factors have something to do with who we become. But I want to talk specifically a little bit more about personality and character and the differences. If you will think of it this way, personality is something that we uncover. And an oak tree is an oak tree is an oak tree. Now, it's going to look different through each season, doesn't it? But it stays an oak tree. And I'll bet if you think back to some of your personality qualities, you can look back and see that they were there when you were a little girl. And they look different through different seasons of life, but they stay the same in a lot of their characteristics. This is just sort of the personality is the way God wired us. Like we just read, it's the way he created us. You can see that in your kids many times, even from the time they're born. One baby will rattle the cage of their crib and with a demand of, let me out of here, very determined. And what's another baby do? They wake up. They look at their toes. You know, they're content until they might sing a little song. You know, you can see personality starting to develop very early. So personality is something that is unfolded. Character, on the other hand, is something that we see changing over time. Okay? Character, and the way I look at it is, character is the oak tree that grows in a different direction. It can grow in a really healthy direction. It can grow in an unhealthy direction. So personality is unfolded, and this is the way I think of it. Personality is like we get this gift of our kids, and as we open it, we just unpeel layer after layer, and we begin to get glimpses of who they are. It's something that we unfold. It's already there, but we get to unfold it. We get to see how God packaged them. Character, on the other hand, I think of is a lot more like Play-Doh. So character has more to do with molding, okay? And I'll give you an example. I had a friend, we were raising our kids together, and we were in a little play group together, and her daughter was very shy. And so when we would talk to her, she would hide behind her mom, and she didn't really want to open up. And so her mom would just always kind of make excuses for her. And we would give her something. She wouldn't say thank you. We'd say hello. She wouldn't say thank you back. Her mom would just say, oh, she's just really shy. Okay, that was personality, right? So what's character in that situation? That's the mom's job to mold that, to guide her, to praise her, to practice at home, and then to praise her when she actually does look you in the eye and say thank you. Those are things that can be learned, right? So character has to do with how we guide our children. That's really what discipline is all about, isn't it? It's helping to guide character. But the value of understanding personality is then we know how to adjust our parenting. We parent our children in a more understanding way. So there are two little factors that I want us to look at as we're thinking about personality, and we're looking specifically through this lens of personality, and the first one is the pace. Now, in this area, you might tend to think that everybody is fast-paced, but we're talking about not the pace of your life, but your internal pace. And again, you might want to think about this as a parent, but also be thinking about your children as we go through this. So what is the speed of your internal motor? Is your internal motor fast or slow? If your child's or your internal motor is fast, you probably make decisions very quickly. As a mom, you're okay with lots of plates spinning at the same time. If it's your children, again, sometimes this is developmental, but if their natural pace is fast, they're probably quick to say what they think and feel. Or they react quickly. They don't mind taking risks. People who are fast-paced tend to be risk-takers. On the other hand, people who are slow-paced, how do they make decisions? They take their time. They're very deliberate. They don't want to be rushed in making decisions. And they don't like change. Okay? So that has to do with our pace. The next thing is our priority, and this has to do with our natural preferences. And by the way, there's no right or wrong in this. This is just the way God made us, okay? So we have to be careful that we don't compare with each other or start to think that one way is better than another. This is just the unique way God has designed us. So what is natural preference is what we're talking about with priority. Is it more toward tasks or people? If you're a more task-oriented person, you probably make decisions based on facts. Children who are task-oriented tend to work well independently. They're okay with playing by themselves, being by themselves. They tend to be thinkers. And when they feel best is when they've accomplished something. That makes them feel really good. Okay, if you're more of a people-oriented priority, how do you make decisions? Not so much facts. What do you think it is? Emotion. It's your feelings. And it's how those decisions are going to impact your relationships, because you're all about people and all about relationships. So the people-oriented person loves to work with others. And when do they feel best? When they're with people and when they have people's approval. Okay? So let me give you a couple of examples. Let's think about for a minute if you have a child who's a task-oriented child, and you send them to their room as punishment. Great, I'm by myself. I can play with my toys by myself. Really not a big deal. Okay, you send a people-oriented child into some sort of timeout. They have to be by themselves. What's that do to them? That's torture. And they can hear you out there. There's fun happening without them. So not better or worse, just different, but it helps us to understand. Okay, what about you as moms? I want you to think about this is a little too close to home, I apologize, a snow day. Okay, think about a snow day, and playgroup is canceled. Okay, so the task-oriented person is a little bit bothered because the routine is gone, and they're not getting stuff done, okay? And the people-oriented person is really ticked because they were going to go to playgroup and be with other moms, and they're going crazy because now they're home and they can't be with people, okay? So you can see how pace and priority play into personality. Well, we're going to put these together in a little chart. And how many of you are familiar with the DISC personality profile? Yeah, I've had a feeling quite a few of you would be. There's so many different personality profiles. This is one that I just happen to like because I feel like it sticks with me and it's easy to understand. So we're going to go through these four different categories. And if you'll notice, those four factors that we just talked about are on this chart. Fast-paced at the top, slow-paced at the bottom, task-oriented on the left, people-oriented on the right. And let's look at the upper left quadrant. This is a fast-paced child who is task-oriented, and we put him in the determined category. The reason it's called the DISC is that each of these letters is going to stand for a different personality category. Now, I have to tell you before we get into this, I always think it's kind of funny, as much as I love this, that we think we can somehow categorize people. You know, I just wonder if God isn't kind of laughing, like, really? They think they've got it figured out. Nobody fits in any of these categories perfectly, all right? But I do think this is a helpful tool in just being able to look at our kids and understand them a little bit better. And I should tell you, I will send this, Sarah, if I send this to you, you can email it to them, right? So I will email the slides to you if you all want it. And we're going to talk about each of these categories really briefly as soon as I go through this. So the I is for influencing. This is a fast-paced child who's also very people-oriented. Next, we have a soft-hearted person who is slow-paced but people-oriented. And the last one is we have a conscientious child who is slow-paced and task-oriented. There is a book that I used with my kids called The Treasure Tree, and it goes through these personality types. They don't have it; they weren't able to order it through the bookstore, but you can get it on Amazon. And I have to tell you, when I would read this with my kids, invariably, without me even asking, they would begin to identify with one of the four animal types, okay? So I'm going to show you each of those animal types as we go through how they correspond with each of these letters. So the D is the directive. I'm going to tell you what it looks like in parents and also in children, but we're going to focus primarily on the kids. So this is a directive parents, determined kids. This is the lion. That gives you a little bit of an idea of the personality, determined and directive. And as kids, these kids are confident. They are decisive. I'm not going to read everything that's up there, just so you know, because I feel like you're capable of doing that. But these are often your leaders. This is the child who, when you enter the restaurant, if you don't select a seat fast enough, they're going to find it and bring the rest of the family with them. They're take charge kind of kids. And they often tend to be leaders. Our son David tends to be in this category. And when he was four, we were on a sabbatical. We were in the remote western coast of Ireland, staying in this little farmhouse cottage. We had only been there a couple of hours, went to bed the next morning. The farmer comes out and says, "Ah, where's the manager?" Referring to our youngest son. He had already picked up on his personality type. So it's not surprising that David had an office in our basement for many years, because even if there weren't other people to direct, he was pretending that. And his greatest thrill was for my husband to go and play office with him, and they would hire and fire people at will, you know. So you just see that personality kind of into play. When we would read books, he always would be analyzing the animals and say, "I think that the squirrel is in charge because he's telling all the other squirrels to gather the nuts." And he was very aware of flow charts and organizations. He, whatever store we were in, he knew who the manager on duty was. He knew them by name. Okay, so you can see, watch your kids' personalities kind of developing. So what are some parenting tips? Well, these kids need activity. They need opportunities to lead, but you also have to teach them how to follow, because that does not come naturally to them. And remember, they're fast-paced and task-oriented, so they need help with slowing down and being compassionate. Let's picture a preschool or playgroup setting. What's this child like in that setting? Bossy. Yeah, they're choosing the games. They're telling everybody else who's doing what, right? So let's talk about as parents. Directive parents are wonderful because they have a plan and they lead really well. But with each of these styles, I'm going to tell you what happens if we go to an extreme, okay, and what we have to be aware of if we're directive parents. We have to be careful because we can be autocratic. And these are some of the things that we're concerned about. We don't want to lose control, and it's harder to say that we're wrong, and we have to be more attentive to relationships. I chose a favorite phrase that I think typifies the directive parent. This is the one I think goes with it. Just do it. And if you find yourself given lots of short commands, it might be that you're just in a hurry, but if you do that even when you're not in a hurry, you're probably a directive parent, okay? So let's go ahead and look at the influencing children. These are interactive parents influencing children, and I don't know if you can tell what the animal is. It's an otter, okay? And the otter is doing a handstand because this personality type is all about people and relationships and fun. I always say they're kind of the party waiting to happen. This is my husband. When we would have meetings together when we were in youth ministry, I would have an agenda. And I was very frustrated. You're laughing because some of these people worked with us in youth ministry and know my husband really well. I would be very frustrated if we didn't get through the agenda. He would, as long as everybody had a good time and they laughed, purpose accomplished. So influencing children like to work in groups. They're very social. They're optimistic. They can tend to be very talkative. And you can probably, some of you are probably seeing this in some of your kids as we're going through this. I saw this in our daughter when she was about three. She came bounding down the stairs because the doorbell had rung. She had no idea who was on the other side of the door, but she flung open her arms and yelled, "Friends!" Because whoever was on the other side, there was a whole world out there of friends to make. So it's really interesting. You'll be able to see this, too, as you look back. You'll begin to see patterns with your kids and their personality types. So what do we need to be careful in parenting kids who have an influencing type of personality? Because people are so important to them, we have to be careful we don't criticize them in front of anybody. I mean, that's true with all kids, but especially with a child who's so in tune with relationships. They really need time with friends, and they thrive on all your encouragement. But they're also susceptible to peer pressure. So we have to teach them early to stand up for themselves and to have their own opinions and not to be influenced by other people. So what are they like in preschool? Well, if they have to sit down and do any kind of a task, they're feeling like that just really interferes with all the people around them that they need to be talking to. And do some of you remember being like that? So what about interactive parents? Well, they are so relational, and they're spontaneous. They're probably fun. In the extreme, they can be permissive, and they have to be willing to be the parent. That's hard because they're so concerned about that relationship with their kids. And one thing that I've noticed, as I said, my husband tends to be this personality type, and I've noticed it's just more natural to give directions and say, okay, or maybe you could kind of, because this personality type is all about people and relationships. And because they're fast-paced, they might have to be careful to listen and not talk quite so much. Their favorite phrase, kids are going out the door. What do they always say? Have a good time. Have fun. Okay, the S stands for supportive parents and soft-hearted kids. This is a golden retriever. Does anybody have a golden retriever? My sister-in-law has a golden retriever. These dogs are just loyal and steadfast, and you'll see those are the qualities of this personality type too. These are team players. I saw that in our son, Drew, when he was first learning to play soccer, just a little guy. And, you know, they don't really care about who's winning at that point anyway. But, although, wait, I take that back, because the D child knows the score and is going to lead the team to victory, okay? But the soft-hearted child is all worried about the kid that just fell and skinned his knee, and he has no clue where the ball is because his eyes are fixed on this child that just got hurt. Drew had an ambulance ride when he was about 3, and so from then on, we would notice if an ambulance was going down the road, the rest of the family is rushing from the backyard to the fence to see the ambulance. We turn around, where's Drew? He's on his knees praying for whoever's in that ambulance. That is a soft-hearted child. I will just tell you, I hope, I would wish a soft-hearted child in every mother because they're the ones that encourage you. He would say, Mom, you're such so a good mom. You know, they just, they are your cheerleaders. They're ready to tell you how good you are. They love to serve, but they don't like the spotlight. Now, some of you, I think, are probably, as we're going through this, you're recognizing this as your personality type, too. But they are encouragers. So parenting tips, they don't do well with change, so we have to keep homes as stable as we can. This is not the child that you surprise them by changing their room around. You let them be part of that process with you. You talk about it. You do it together. You warn them, we're playing at a friend's house. In a few minutes, we're going to be leaving. We're going to be cleaning up because they just don't do change real well. And they have a harder time making decisions. We have to be really careful to keep our promises. Why? I mean, obviously, it's always important as parents, but particularly for this type of child, because they are so loyal, and your relationship to them is so important. What do they look like in preschool? They love the routine. Mom, first we did the calendar, and then we did the weather, and then we had center time. They just love that routine, and they thrive on that. So supportive parents, you are great at encourages. You're your kids' best cheerleaders. And what do you have to be careful of in the extreme? It can be accommodating. So I would say don't cave if you're an S parent and you're a supportive parent. I remember when our oldest son was just a little guy in the high chair, but old enough to understand his dad's instructions. He was kicking the high chair, and his dad said, Michael, don't kick the high chair. Looks at his dad and kicks it again. Michael, I told you don't kick the high chair. If you kick the high chair again, you're going to get a spanking. He looks at his dad, thinks about it. You know what he did. Kicked the high chair. His aunt Mimi, who is as soft-hearted as they come and did not have children yet, immediately said, oh, he didn't mean it. And fortunately, she figured out how to be a little more decisive before she had her own kids, and I have wonderful nephews and a niece, but this is a soft-hearted parent. We want to rescue them because, you know, we're just so tender-hearted. What's the favorite phrase of a soft-hearted parent? Sending the kids out the door, just get along, because that's really what's most important, is just keep the peace and everybody get along. And you'll see that in your kids, too, that are soft-hearted. They just don't want anything rocking the boat. Well, what about the careful parents and conscientious kids. Do you recognize the animal? It's a beaver. Now, it's hard to tell because everybody's carrying him, and he's cheering. Why is he so happy? Because he worked, and he loves to work. So beavers are known for being hard workers. So the characteristics of conscientious kids, they have very high standards. You probably are not going to have to be real hard on them because they're already so hard on themselves. Do some of you have some of those kids? Some of you were those kids, are those moms. They're very attentive to details. They're probably the ones that in their room are lining up their toys. And they like to count. They're very self-disciplined. These kids can make you look like a really good parent. And if this is your firstborn, you know, you think you've pretty well got it figured out until you realize, oh, this really has more to do with their personality than it has to do with my parenting. They are often very compliant. Our oldest son, Michael, I remember he was at the Joyce's house. We kind of had our kids growing up together, which was really fun. And he had a donut. And he said, "A donut? Mrs. Joyce, I haven't had a donut since Tuesday, April 17th. I mean, they just remember the details. I think a calendar is just kind of imprinted in their brain. He had all the stats memorized on the back of his baseball cards. It's not surprising he went into finance. They're cautious. In sports, they would rather play defense than offense because they don't really like to put themselves out there. So how do we help these kids? Well, we help them develop tolerance for imperfection, both in themselves and in other people. That's hard. We have to help them focus on who they are because they're so focused on what they do. Remember, they're slow-paced and they're task-oriented. So we have to help them begin to appreciate relationships, and we help them focus on not just on, oh, look what you did, but the qualities that look what a hard worker you were, look how kind you were. So we begin to focus on qualities and not just on their work and help bring them out of their shell. What do they look like in preschool? They feel so good when they finish their work. They love those stickers that give them feedback as to how they're doing. What about in parents? Well, careful parents usually have an orderly home, and they think ahead, and they're very prepared. So what happens if they go to the extreme? Well, I will say we can be perfectionists. We have to avoid perfectionism by working towards spontaneity and fun. When my daughter was little, I'm really embarrassed to tell you this, but the reality is I put on my to-do list play dollhouse because I knew that I was task-oriented and my most natural mode was to get things checked off my list and to do things. I thought when I would be sitting on the floor playing with my kids, I would think, okay, I think I'm playing, but actually I think I'm kind of cleaning up while I'm playing because that was my most natural inclination was to bring order to the chaos, knowing that it was going to be chaos again immediately afterwards. So we have to be careful that plans and tasks don't take higher priority. Do you see how understanding your pace and your priority, whether you're people-oriented or task-oriented, you have to kind of balance that, and you balance that in your kids too? And we have to caution against asking too many questions because we love details. So, what's their favorite phrase? I knew this because I started realizing this is something I said often to my kids, especially as they're getting ready to go somewhere with little friends or whatever. Just be careful. So I hope you've seen a little bit of your kids and yourself in that. That just gives you a little taste. I want to tell you, this is a book that I read when my kids, I wish I had been able to read it when they were younger, when it first came out, and Charles Boyd actually came to our church and spoke, and I started reading the book. I can still remember where I was on vacation, because when else do you get to read? And just poring over this book and finding out what a good resource it was. Bethy and I were talking about that earlier, too. It's a go-to book. I can tell you, as I was preparing this talk, and going back to personality, it was helping me remember, even though I'm not in a situation where I'm parenting my children anymore, I'm still relating to them. And understanding their personality really helps me to know how to adjust my interactions with them. So if you can begin to understand your own personality, begin to observe situations where your child's personality is being uncovered, it will be a tremendous help to you as they're growing up. What would be some good situations in which you can observe your kids' personalities? That's something I want you to talk about at your tables, but I'll give you a couple of little hints. One is when there's any kind of change, watch how they handle change. Watch how they handle decisions. That's really helpful. Watch how they play, and especially as they're getting older. I'm not talking about when they're 18 months and they're, you know, touching the other baby's face and stuff. I'm talking when they actually get to a point that they're doing some sort of cooperative play. Watch how they do that. Watch how they interact with other kids. And that will give you some good clues to their personality. But obviously, the most important thing you can do is to pray and ask God to help you understand their personality. Because like I said, personality is just one lens. There are all these other factors in their lives that that are helping to form who they are. But God wants to partner with you in that. And, you know, I find that as I look at my own personality, there are things I see that I feel really good about. There's a lot I see that I don't feel good about. And it's not so much because of the way God's made me, but it's because of whether or not I am submitting to the way he wants me to live that personality out. If I'm being more self-centered and self-focused, or if I'm learning to be flexible and focused on other people. And we'll find that with our kids, too. As we look at our kids' personalities, there'll be things about our kids that we just think are so wonderful. And as they get older and their personalities develop, they're things that just weigh on our hearts. And we have to ask God to help us as we develop, help them guide their personalities into good character that is more like Christ. So none of us are balanced in personality. But I will say, the one who is Jesus Christ. He's the only one that has that perfect balance between those four different areas of personality that we looked at tonight. So if you think about it, he's determined. He's a great leader. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He is ready to lead me and take care of me. He's ready to lead my kids and take care of them. He is the perfect parent. He is interactive. He's all about relationships. He wants a relationship with each one of us. He's given us the Bible so that we can know him better. And he has given us Jesus. And Jesus came to die in my place specifically so that I could be forgiven of my sin and have a relationship with God. So Jesus is all about relationships. The S, he is soft-hearted. He is supportive. He's loyal. He is the only one who can say, I will never leave you. Never will I forsake you. And he can follow through on it. How about the C? He's careful. He's attentive. He knows exactly what you need as a mom. He knows exactly what your child needs. He knows exactly how to meet those needs because he is careful and attentive. So why do we have these strengths and weaknesses in our personality? I've been thinking about that a lot this week as I've been preparing. And, I mean, there are a lot of reasons. One is that he wants us in relationship with him, and he wants us in relationship with each other. So in our relationships with each other, we learn from each other, don't we? We learn, we fill in the gaps with each other's strengths and weaknesses. And we want our kids to learn that too. There's some things that they're good at. There's some things their friends are good at. They're going to learn from each other. But I think he also wants us and our kids to understand that in our weaknesses, he wants us to depend on him. And he wants to partner with us. As a matter of fact, when we ask Christ to be our Savior, he gives us his Spirit to live inside of us so that he can guide us and provide for our needs. I love this verse. This is one of my favorite verses. My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And my prayer is that you will have that kind of a close relationship with God, with the one who designed your personality and the unique personality of each child, because he wants to partner with you. He wants to partner with you as the guide for the unfolding of their personality, the molding of character in each precious child that he has entrusted to you. So thank you. I've enjoyed being with you this evening.